Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome to Squanderlust, a podcast about the emotional side of money. Why our actions aren't always as good as our intentions, and what we can do about it. I'm Martha Lawton.
And I'm Alex Lemon.
And we're your hosts. This week on Squanderlust, why avoiding looking at your bank balance doesn't make you a bad person.
And why a little bit of courage will start taking you a long way with your money.
Anyway, slight flip on the norm.
Yeah.
I'm driving the Squanderlust ep bus today. Boop, boop. Martha's usually jumping in, but this is a topic that is very close to my heart. It's actually an awful topic. We're going to talk about shame, which sounds so dreadful, but I really like it. No, I really like it as a topic. It's something that I sort of started learning about as a concept about maybe 5 years ago, and it's really fundamentally changed the way that I approach many different things in my life, which is why I find it so important. And money is definitely an area of shame. So
many people.
Yeah.
We've definitely said, don't be ashamed, don't be ashamed.
Yeah.
It's been such a cry on this, but let's dig into shame today.
What exactly it is. So the way that I learned about it was through the research of a woman called Brené Brown, who has done 2 very popular TED Talks, which you can watch online, are totally worth your time, although maybe, you know, wear something cozy while you're watching, because it just sort of blew my head open when I learned about it, in a kind of, oh my God, my life's terrible. But then in a good way of like, now I can sort myself out. So I found it quite moving.
But, she's also been on Netflix quite recently.
Yeah,
as well.
She does have a series. I haven't watched that actually, but she does have a bit of a, is it a documentary or a series or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it all comes from her. And she researches shame. So she spends all day in this stuff. And she defines shame as the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Something we've experienced, done or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. So it's basically intensely feeling that you're unlikable and unlovable and that you don't belong somewhere.
Ugh.
Yeah, which is something that everyone feels except people who are psychopaths. Everyone has shame feelings unless they're incapable of emotions. And it's just whether you can mitigate it more or less. And that's something that you can work on to get better at. And that's something that I've worked on to get better at as well. Brené Brown talks about shame as a perception. It's how we see ourselves through other people's eyes. So it's a very kind of internal perspective while looking at someone else, they might look at you. It's very externally referencing. It's about our place in society and what other people think of us.
Fear of being thrown out of the village.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Of not being part of something, of being shunned, of being thought badly of. She talks about it separately from guilt. So guilt is, I did something bad. Shame is, I am bad, sort of intrinsically, I'm a bad person. I didn't just do a bad thing. I am horrible. Everyone dislikes me, that kind of thing. And it's very closely, I've seen it very closely related to should language. So when I get into should mindsets, that's usually when my shame is starting to come through.
Do you want to give us an example of should language?
I should have a proper job and not be a freelancer. It's a big one. That kind of thing.
Well, I should have an emergency fund.
Yeah. I should have a steady income.
Bigger than my few hundred quid I have right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we're going to, a little bit later, get well into shame and money specifically, but kind of build out some of the research that Brené Brown has done. Yeah, so what does shame look like? How does it kind of turn up in our lives? How do we spot it? Brené Brown talks about the warm wash of shame, so that weird feeling that you get when... I don't know, that sort of cold, hot, weird skin feeling that you're like really, like massively embarrassed. Because embarrassment, like, again, related to guilt. Embarrassment is I did something bad, but shame is more than that because it's I am bad. But you're like, I can, as I talk about it, I can almost feel the feeling and it's nasty.
I don't want to kind of, it's almost like your whole body has weed itself. I know that's really gross.
No, but... that is it. That is it. We went there, but it's a good description, so we're going to run with it. Oh, God, yeah. Like, anyway, let's not think too much more about that feeling because it is quite nasty. And it shows up from the research that Brené Brown has done, it shows up differently along the gender lines. Mm-hmm. So for women, shame drives us to think that we have to be nice, thin and modest and use all of our resources for our appearance. So there's a lot of shame around, you know, body shame is a well-known phrase, and that's exactly it, around how you look, how you dress, whether you're too loud, whether you've got too many opinions, you know, all that kind of thing. And for men...
You've kissed too many people.
Yes, exactly. Very much around whether you're demure and contained. And for men, it's a lot about emotional control, putting work first, pursuing status and being aggressive and violent. You know, it kind of, those are things that are associated with you not feeling shame. So if you control your emotions, because emotions are shameful, you know, men shouldn't cry, men shouldn't, you know, be sad about things, men shouldn't love people, men should just be about work and legacy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's very shame-driven concepts and kind of appearances.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting this really Victorian imagery here of the kind of man, the colonial conqueror on one side, and what do they call it? The angel of the home, or the domestic angel or something on the other side with all of her corsets so she can hardly breathe. And that's very much the image that these two things are giving me.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're both terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, totally it. So, yeah, there are shame triggers, is how Brené Brown describes the sort of circumstances that make our shame kind of pop up in us. And they're different for everybody, but they tend to map to certain areas in our lives. We actually covered a lot of these. They sort of touch on stuff that we covered in the values and valuing episode that we did in the first season, if you want to go back and listen to that after this. So it's things like society, culture, media, family, friends, work. Shame will come up specifically in these areas to different degrees for different people. So family, for instance, you know, you feel like you feel shame if you don't tidy your bedroom because you used to get in so much trouble as a kid with your, you know, with your mum. Small things like that to the stuff about I should have a really stable career because my family depends on me. You know, it can be really small stuff that can kick us off, and then but really big things too.
Yeah, or even if they don't depend on you, that was their expectation of you.
Mm.
That's what they wanted for you, and then you're not meeting that expectation.
Yeah.
You're doing something different.
Again, the should sort of expectation stuff coming in there. There's a lot of shame triggers in media with, you know, how are we supposed to look? What are we supposed to buy? How are we supposed to live? How much money are we supposed to spend on things? Have we got the newest stuff?
Are we pursuing the right interests?
Yeah.
Are our interests cool?
Exactly. Yeah, the cool stuff. Like, even, you know, just things like you don't want to say that you've got a deep abiding love for Miley Cyrus, which I don't. But, you know,
if I did,
I would be out there with it right now. that, you know, it's that kind of thing of like, if I say that out loud, then people will think I'm silly and awful. And so I won't. That's shame. Is people not just being able to embrace what they like because they're worried about how people will perceive that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of, shame triggers are basically things that start making you say should or feel like you're not good enough. And being not good enough is the sort of central feeling of shame. And this kind of plays out in sort of three main ways, which when I learned about this, I found it incredibly interesting, both from like how I project my shame. Because when we feel shame, we want to do something with it because it's a horrible feeling and we need to get rid of it. And we get rid of it through what Brené Brown terms shame screens.
Yep.
And yeah, when I saw my main mode in this, and there is kind of a mode in the three types, but it's not, you will probably experience all three, project all three, but depending on where, who you're with, what the situation is. And I think people tend to have a sort of more underlying mode in one of them. It's more common. So the three are, she terms them away, towards, and against.
Right.
Away being about, you feel shame, you withdraw, you hide, you silence yourself, you keep things secret, you just kind of go a bit hermity, and, you know, maybe something comes up in a conversation that you feel ashamed about, you'll just basically stop talking in the conversation and let other people carry on, and, and you'll just sit quietly and just think, I'm not valid, or if they hear what I've got to say, you know, they're not going to like it.
Familiar.
Yeah. So the next one, towards, this is the big one for me. Towards is about appeasing and pleasing. It's the kind of people-pleasing thing. So you feel shame with someone and all you want to do is get away from that feeling by making them feel better about themselves.
Okay.
So it's a weird one. But like, you feel like you're not worthy of their attention. You're not good enough for them. So you'll basically like buy them little presents, make them nice things, say some nice things about them. Not because that's, you know, maybe you genuinely do think that, but also as a way to look better in their eyes, or you think that you're going to look better in their eyes. And I, because I experienced as a child quite a lot of bullying, this is a real thing for me of like, I would feel ashamed because I was excluded by the bullies. And then I would try really hard to make them my friends. So that was the one that was like, oh, I do that.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of that one, but the away is the one that I think is really speaking to me so far. Just, nope, I can't deal. Shut down, run away, hide.
Yeah. And the third type of shame screen, the thing that we throw up to combat our feeling of shame, is against. And that's about gaining power over others, being aggressive and fighting shame with shame. So if you feel shamed, you're just going to shame someone right back. I kind of want to say like Donald Trump, but this is a really, I mean, I talked earlier about the split between the shame manifestations in men and women. This is one that's more associated with male behavior.
Right. Yeah.
The kind of aggressive, like getting into fights sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, because shaming back at someone doesn't have to be a physical kind of aggression. It can be, you know, you can pick on anything. And, you know, bullying is in itself an against shame screen. Like, you know, kids at school will bully to detract attention from them, you know, bad attention from them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of, it's not something I really do, although I'm sure I have probably in my life shamed someone back when I felt shame. But it's definitely something I observe. And this is the interesting thing, is not just identifying what you are more likely to fall in and of behavior yourself, but that you can then see it happening in other people. And that, when you start seeing that, can be quite a powerful thing, because at the, you know, shame and insecurity have a huge overlap. They're not, you know, completely the same, but there's a huge area of the middle of that Venn.
Yeah.
And you'll see a lot of these sort of shame screen things when people are experiencing a sense of insecurity, which is a similar sort of, you know, it's just definitely associated with shame.
Yeah.
And the kind of against tactics. And they're not uncommon in very corporate-y work environments, as we're all trying to grapple to get better. And I saw a lot of this when I worked in corporate cultures, was the kind of against-y stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't have to be physical violence. It's a very sort of offensive way of...
It's one of the reasons, I think, why... I mean, and it's not always the most appropriate way to approach it, but why, you know, arguments on the internet go so wrong.
Yep. Yeah.
Is because one person makes somebody else feel shame, whether intentionally or not, actually. The initial statements or questions that provoke the sense of shame may not have been intended to provoke shame,
but they do.
And then the person who experiences that shame, if they either fight shame with shame or respond in that aggressive way, then, you know, the whole thing can escalate very, very quickly because of that. And at the core of it, the thing they're fighting over is who gets to hold the shame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like this horrible sort of icky bundle that no one wants to hold, but it's like, you know, it becomes the sort of hot potato in that situation of everyone's just passing it to each other because they're so desperate to expel that feeling that it turns into something else. And really, what you need to do with it is treat it in a very different way, which we're going to come on to later.
Yes.
But we're going to take a little break now, and then we'll be back with some specific stuff about shame and money and then what we can do about it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Before the ads, we were talking about shame, what it is, where it comes from, how it shows up, what we do with it. And now we're going to talk about it specifically about money, because that's what we're here for.
And
I'm sure Martha will have a lot to
I've been thinking about this because I've been thinking about the reactions that I would get when I was teaching about money. And you get a lot of pushback and resistance from people in workshops because when you teach somebody things they could be doing better, they can feel shame about their past actions or about their current circumstances, or feel like you're judging their current circumstances because you're saying there's a different way that will make things better. And, you know, if the way that somebody has been dealing with the shame of being in a bad position with their money is to say that there was nothing I could have done about it, if that was their way of bumping the shame out, then when you say, no, no, there are different actions that can be taken that will benefit you, that dumps all of the shame back onto them again.
Yeah.
And that's never been my intention. It's only ever been about how can you just make things better. But because, you know, if you didn't know these techniques, then you couldn't have implemented them. Therefore, there is nothing to feel ashamed of.
Yeah. But it's very easy to go to a place of, oh, I should have known that, or I should have been doing that for years, which is, again, the should
the
word,
should,
which
yeah.
is the shame associated word.
Yeah. And so a lot of people would throw that back at me, trying to argue with me, trying to pick at what I was saying, or, you know, being very defensive. And it is really just about, you know, I'm experiencing shame in this moment and I don't like it. And so creating a space where people feel safe to have these conversations and won't feel shamed is such a vital part of that conversation around money. And again, going back to the discussion with Money A&E, you know, the way that they run their sessions is, again, as in that financial education context, they do it really well using peers to teach, because there's less shame in hearing from somebody who is your peer.
Which is definitely something that we're going to come back to in a bit about the sort of mitigation of shame. It's the kind of the me as well situation, which we'll come on to a little bit later. But we just want to sort of dash through some examples of how the money shame might be showing up in people's lives to make it a bit more relatable and understandable. Because the thing about money and about human nature and shame is that we can shame ourselves for having money or for not having money. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. I live in London and I feel shame about the fact that I managed to live in this city and own, on a mortgage, my own home, which these days is such a difficult thing to do, and I'm incredibly lucky, but I do feel like quite ashamed sitting in situations talking about that. And at the same time, I also
likewise.
Feel which is silly because, you know, I'm very privileged to have that and fortunate, and but also I just feel very awkward about that.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, people won't want to hear that from me, and suddenly I won't be like them if I talk about it because so many people are struggling with housing in the city. But similarly, I also feel ashamed of not earning a steady income and not always having enough money, and sometimes being a bit, well, the money's not come through this month, so I'm not going to do the things with you. So I definitely feel it in my life. And it's like shame around things like, saying you can't afford social activities, not checking your bank balance because you're worried about what it's going to say, and you're going to feel that I've weed myself all over feeling of like, oh gosh, I must be a terrible person because I've gone in the red again this month.
Yeah. The classic one with debts is just not opening envelopes.
Right. Yeah.
That's the real classic manifestation of shame, of debt shame.
Yeah.
Is when people stop opening their mail.
And that's the away thing. That's just hiding from the problem, the kind of ostrich thing.
Yeah.
And then you might be, from feeling shame, you might then, you know, do things like buy clothes you can't afford to maintain a certain appearance.
Mm-hmm. Because Familia.
Because you don't want to say, you know what, I'm going to stick with, I look good in this. That, you know, you don't feel like what you've got is adequate.
Yeah.
And a thing for me that I feel actually is like the feeling of not deserving stuff.
Mm.
I don't deserve a nice holiday or, you know, not going to buy myself a nice thing because I don't deserve it because I haven't worked. I'm not working hard enough. I haven't earned enough. But people can do it, you know, down to really essential things like healthcare. Like they don't, you know, they don't deserve to go and get the cold remedy that's going to make them feel better because, you know, well, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have, you know, gone running in the rain and then I wouldn't be ill. You know, it's just that kind of...
Yeah, I think there's not even... I mean, it doesn't even necessarily... The cause of the shame doesn't necessarily have to link directly to the denial.
Mm.
The denial exists kind of in balance to the shame, but they can manifest in completely different parts of your life.
True. Yeah.
So you could have money shame about your financial situation and not being as good as it should be.
Mm.
And you could be punishing yourself for that shame in some way by not buying a flu remedy.
Mm.
But actually... If you rebalanced your budgeting, you could afford the flu remedy and it would be good for you.
Mm.
But you're almost hurting yourself because you're ashamed.
Right. Yeah, we talked about
in
this.
In a completely different way.
Yeah.
Like you could still be buying things in other areas that you can afford.
Yeah. So this kind of relates to some of the stuff we covered in the self-care episode at the very end of season one.
Yeah.
Where you kind of do things like that to sort of punish yourself because you deserve that punishment. You know, but actually you don't. And, you know, opening your mail, opening your bills, checking your bank balance, rejigging your finances is actually something that you do deserve because you deserve not to feel bad about it.
Yes. And therefore, shame spiral. Your finances are getting worse because you feel bad about yourself.
Mm.
For not fixing your finances, and you punish yourself for not doing it by not doing it.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. It's also in the procrastination episode as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like this is procrastination. The complex procrastination is full of shame stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, this is everywhere. This is why I found it so fundamentally useful as a concept, because it just is in everything. And when you start seeing it, it's a bit shocking to start with, but then it becomes a really useful way to think through things. So, which is a good point to talk about. What are we going to do about it? So it exists. We feel it a lot. We've weed ourselves all over.
I'm sorry I brought that up.
I'm kind of glad though, because it is quite amusing. We need to lighten this mood. Yeah. So what can we do about shame? It's something that we can only mitigate. We can't get rid of it, which is a bit unfortunate. But again, if you don't have it, you're a psychopath. So that's the trade-off.
Yeah, and it is. It's fundamentally about being able to get along with other people.
Yeah.
And so to some extent, we need it because we need to care about what other people think about us to some extent.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're a psychopath.
Yeah.
We'll be a hateful person who just uses other people all the time. That makes sense. Yes.
So the sort of ultimate mitigating thing for shame is empathy. If we can give and receive empathy, it really kind of melts away shame. So rather than trying to expel it through those three away towards against types of things, if we can kind of generate between people some empathy and some sense of connection, then actually that sort of me as well, as I mentioned earlier, that feeling of it's somebody else understands me. They don't think I'm terrible for what I've done, for what I'm feeling, for what's happened, for who I am. Yeah. I'm enough. So sort of developing empathy, Brené Brown looks at it through three different actions. One of them is courage. So she's like, you have to basically be vulnerable and say how you feel about something. You have to speak up about, you know, I'm feeling ashamed right now, or that thing makes me feel really uncomfortable, or I feel like, you know, I don't deserve to do this thing, be this thing. You know, just saying it is the start. This starting point.
This is the premise of therapy, but it's also the premise of various anonymous circles. Your Narcotics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, all of those, you know, you're speaking up and saying the thing that you did as a first step, isn't it?
Yeah, or definitely.
Set of steps.
Because you can't do anything about it unless you kind of say that it's there. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just awaying all the time. You're just ignoring it all the time. And you've got like the ugly sticky bundle in your hand, and you kind of just got to hold it a bit gently and say, well, here it is. Look at my ugly sticky bundle.
Such a gross episode.
It's got really sort of
body horror.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right.
For like a Channel 5 documentary.
But that's the thing about shame is because body shame is such an innate thing. And yeah, it's inevitable that the thing that we find shameful is the thing that we find disgusting.
Mm, yeah, yeah, totally.
And therefore, if we're going to talk about it, we might as well talk about it in really disgusting terms. Yes.
All friends here.
Yeah.
So the other kind of behaviour that you need to mitigate shame is compassion to yourself as well. So again, self-care episode that came up. And in the procrastination episode, we talked about self-compassion and towards others. So trying to understand their situation, how they might be feeling, and being gentle with that and trying to be non-judgmental. And I think it's easier to be less judgmental about other people than it is about ourselves, which is why it's really important to focus on yourself. Because basically, if you can't be a bit kind to yourself about something, then it's very likely you won't be kind to anybody else about that.
I think that's a personality thing. And I think you can practice both ways. On that one, I think sometimes it is easier to be less judgmental about others, and sometimes it's easier to be less judgmental about yourself.
I think it's a starting point for it, is seeing how you are less judgmental about other people. But to maintain that as a long-term behaviour, you have to get good at it about yourself.
Yes.
Because you run out of energy to do it for other people.
Yes, that's very true.
So I think it's a good way of learning the practice.
Yes.
Yeah, but you can't maintain it long-term, giving it all away to other people and being really unkind to yourself. And so the third behaviour that helps mitigate shame is connections, so forming connections. And if you're courageous about things, you speak up about things, you show compassion, it's easier to build that kind of connection. And so it's kind of finding mutual support, finding someone who will understand you, that you will understand, that you can talk to about stuff, that you can share experiences with and accept. And you know, we can identify those people in our lives, and we kind of often want more of them. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, to be able to mitigate the shame, it's important that you pick the right people who are going to come at you in that accepting, supportive, compassionate way when you own up to some of your deepest, darkest shames. You need it to be the right person. So it's not like you can just walk into a room and just tell everyone how you feel, because that's not going to go well.
Well, that is essentially
that's what we're doing right now.
We're doing, that's kind of what we're doing. But we do this in the knowledge that we're going to get flack for it, potentially.
People might not like what we have to say, but what we really do it for is that even if it's just one person who feels better because somebody understood them, the power of that kind of connection is huge. And it can turn I'm a terrible person into, maybe I'm a little bit more normal than I thought. Mm-hmm. So, it's forming those connections is really important, but you need to do it in the right way, and you can't just blurt out.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that I don't know that we have a lot of expectation of connection with this show. We have an expectation that we are being courageous and we're being compassionate, but we know that what we're doing is putting something into the world, and so the level of connection that's possible is limited.
Yeah, we might not feel the connection, but I always think...
I hope that people do feel some connection with us.
Yeah,
I hope
that
people get that from us and feel supported by what we're doing here. But I think also, we're realistic about the level of connection that's possible when you just put something into the world.
I think about that. I'm going to get this quote wrong because I never remember quotes properly, but it's an Alan Bennett thing where he's talking about his writing and what he sort of likes about reading himself and about, you know, finds important about writing is that moment where it feels like someone's reached out and held your hand.
Nice.
And that's what I kind of think about, you know, although we may never know that who's actually listened to it and taken anything from it, that somebody may have that feeling of like, oh, I'm not so alone.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. Please do let us know if you are feeling more connected.
Yeah,
because of what
got
we've
anything
done
from it.
Yeah, we would love to hear about it. It would be great. We do occasionally hear back from people, and they have been lovely. So,
we have actually.
Yeah.
Just this week.
Yeah,
I sent you one.
Yeah, connect people. We want to hear. It'd be great.
So. Yes, if we've looked at courage, compassion and connection to mitigate our shame, how can we do this specifically about money to help us deal with our money shame? So the courage angle, this is a lot about gathering knowledge, opening yourself up to the knowledge, opening the letter that you don't want to. That's a very courageous act, but it's a kind of necessary one to get anywhere else. Because shame sort of lives in this ambiguous space where you don't really know.
Yeah.
And that's a space where we kind of want to stay with money, even though it's incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. When we were talking about that a little bit before, when we were planning this episode, I thought about shame being like the monster in the horror movie. Mm. Like there's a saying in horror movies that you don't show the monster or you don't show the monster till the end, because what you're imagining is a lot more scary than whatever the VFX can actually create.
Yeah.
And I think that's true with shame a lot of the time. The shame is not necessarily in the reality. The shame is in how bad you imagine it getting.
Mm. Yeah, so taking the leap to open the letters, to look at your bank balance, to sketch out your first budget. And yeah, there's a reframing, taking action as well as changing things from should to can. Mm. So what is it that you want to do? You're feeling a lot of shoulds, but what is it that you can do? So a should about, you know, I feel like I should have a budget. Well, maybe you could just make a budget for this week and see how that goes.
Yep.
Or start a budget and you're going to write sort of 5 expenses in and then you're going to come back a few days later and thinking that you can't, you know, you don't have to do it all at once.
I was thinking in terms of the courage side of things just now. I was thinking about some of the debt advice forums and things that exist. So in the UK, that would be things like the Debt Free Wannabe Forum on Money Saving Expert. Mm-hmm. Internationally, I'm not sure what else exists, but just reading other people's money blogs a little bit and seeing the courage that they have shown in talking about their stories might give you the courage to then step up.
Definitely.
Same thing with looking at some of the research that some of the debt advice organisations have done about how many people they talk to every year. You know, you're going to see if they're talking to that many people every year, there's a lot of people who are in debt, you know. So you can build some courage by just looking at the numbers of actually how many people are there being helped with this issue and what are other people's stories around it.
Exactly. And then, you know, following that, so you've maybe had a go at your budget, you've looked at your bank balance, that's where the compassion comes in. So you've done it, you were really brave, be kind to yourself about that. You've had a go, you're making a start, you're making some inroads, be kind to yourself about that. And think about, you know, if you are hearing these voices of like criticizing yourself, like where are they coming from? Is it really something that you're feeling yourself, or it's like some voice of some person in the background that's just creeping in?
And do you like and respect that voice? Is that actually a voice that you want to listen to?
Yeah.
Or is that a voice that comes from, you know, your bully at school or like some smarmy neighbour? Do you actually really care about that person's opinion? Do they have your best interests at heart?
Exactly. And then maybe you can use your own voice to just silence it.
Yeah.
And as a part of compassion, like do what you can, change what you can, and kind of just accept what you can't. You've made mistakes in the past. You probably could have done this sooner. We all could have done, but we're doing it now. So that's the main thing, and to kind of just let go. And we've talked about this previously, but like congratulate yourself on small, even small wins, because some of them are really hard earned.
Yes. So. Very true.
Yes. Very true. And on the connection front with money, find your people. Find the people that you can talk to about money. Mm. We did previously, I can't remember which episode it was, now talk about buddies. I think it was during the budgeting episode, maybe.
We did.
We talked about finding buddies that maybe you can kind of stay accountable with, but also can be like, oh, I did this thing and I feel really awkward about it. And they'll go, yeah, I've done that before. and, you know, find the people that you can trust to give you some decent advice. It doesn't have to be professionals. It could be, but it could also be just friends who you discover from talking openly with them that they're quite good at their own budgeting, or they've tried a few things and this worked for them.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll take their advice in future. And one thing as well is if some of your shame voices are about, I can't afford this, I can't say no to this friend wants me to go on holiday with them and I know it's going to be really expensive because they love fancy restaurants. It could be that sometimes you just need to let them go as friends, and that the pain of voicing like I can't afford to do these things, it's not my kind of lifestyle, maybe they'll be the kind of go, oh right, well that's cool, we can just go to the cinema instead. Or they might just be kind of pulling you into a world that's not the right one for you.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you always have to get rid of somebody completely, although when you think about it, it might be that you do identify some people that you thought were friends, and in actual fact you're more of an accessory to them than you are a friend. And you can only be friends contingent on your living up to some very shallow appearance-based model for them. But it might be that, yeah, when you think about it, actually, you're trying to live up to something for somebody, but they don't really care about that. And you can reform a friendship in a way that is more fitted to your budget and your lifestyle.
Yeah, because when you bring it back to how do I feel connected to this person,
yes,
you can actually get to the core of things that really matter. And if we could all drop this sort of pretense that makes us all feel so weird and ashamed, then actually we would all probably get on a lot better. We'd all just be more honest.
Yeah.
Then it would be a slightly happier place, I reckon.
Yeah, I like that.
You've been listening to Squanderlust, a podcast about the emotional side of money. Your hosts were Martha Lawton and Alex Lemon. You can find us online at squanderlustpod.com, where we'll put links to show notes, books and articles we mention, and other interesting things. If there's a topic you'd like us to cover, or you have a story to tell about something you've heard here, get in touch through the website.
If you enjoyed Squanderlust, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, and rate us too. The more stars you give, the happier we get. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. Squanderlust is sponsored by Wardour Studios in Fitzrovia, London, with production by David Smith, Charlie Brandon King, Tom Berry, and Alicia Cunningham. Our theme music is by Wardour Studios and graphic design by Jason Reed. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.